Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Jay and Lehman, and today we will start a deep dive into the mega adventure for the Cyber Papacy, Unhallowed Data, or Data, however you want to pronounce that. But before we get into that, we did want to talk a little bit about just adventures in the Cyber Papacy in general. I know a lot of times people have had, I don't want to necessarily say big problems, but they've had hiccups in trying to figure out how to do the Cyber Papacy with a bunch of big high-tech surveillance stuff, but then the lower social axiom bureaucracy or
theobureaucracy
that kind of slow things down so the Storm Knights aren't instantly recognized on camera and immediately have hosts beating down their doors, unless that's part of the story, the plot. But there's other things that I wanted to go over as well. And the first is the whole, and this one is kind of central to this in a way that I think makes it work for this adventure, but you might not want to always just have it as a default, which does seem to occur a lot of times. And that is getting around piety scores. So the original Torg Eternity rulebook, core rulebook, that talked about piety scores. The Cyber Papacy sourcebook talked about piety scores. Lots of the adventures set in the Cyber Papacy talk about them. But one of the very first things that normally happens with an adventure is the Storm Knights get kind of huddled into the briefing room and then are told, hey, here's your spoofed piety scores. Yeah. So that's kind of a... And I can see it could be very needed, because if you have a bad piety score, then, okay, they're going to be, you know...
No piety score.
Or none, you know, not high enough. You're going to be watched, you're going to be pointed out, and stuff like that. But then on the flip side, I think action should have repercussions, consequences, not necessarily negative, but for every action there should be a reaction. So if the Storm Knights are out there and acting as if they're part of the Cyber Papacy population, and even though they don't believe it, but they're like praising the Cyber Pope, Mal Roe, and you know they're at least outside looking pious and everything, then that could increase their piety score and give the Storm Knights and the players a reason to roleplay that out instead of falling back on that, oh, I'm just going to get a spoof piety score so I can say whatever I want at any time and not have to deal with it. So what are your thoughts on Storm Knights, piety scores, and using them in cyberpapal adventures?
I think it's always a shame when a game system or setting creates an interesting mechanic and then instantly gives you a way to completely ignore it and make it pointless. I've seen this also in a lot of other games that have survival mechanics, you know, when it's like, okay, you need to consume a food and a water every day or whatever. And usually, like, some of the newer games use dice to determine when they come down instead of that. But then the Lattice skill, which just lets you, or a spell or something, which just auto does it. And now you don't have to even interact with that subsystem anymore.
Right.
And I feel that piety score is kind of one of those things where some people just don't want to deal with it, so they just say, oh, it's spoofed and that's it, which is kind of a shame because it's actually a pretty important part of the setting. So what I've been doing, and I think I took this from someone into organized play, maybe Rod, was if a mission does give you a spoofed piety score, and there are Delphi missions that say they're doing that, so obviously the Delphi Council does have the ability to do it, as well as cleansing getting all of the spyware out of cybertech and things
Right.
like that. So they do have the capability to do it. But I give you still your spoofed piety score is what it is. Like you get it, and I'll randomly roll the number to see what your piety score is. And then what you do with that afterwards is up to you. So if you go around mooning people and praising Satan or what have you, it's gonna go down. Just because it's spoofed doesn't mean it's invincible.
Right,
So
or it's
it just,
static.
yeah, and you'll probably be given a new one. You're not using like your actual character's one unless you're famous or something. But so you'll probably get a new one in a new mission with a number, like with a different number. So as long as you're like in and out, that's fine. But if you're on a long extended mission and you have to make that last, that's a different story. So what I would also do is make it just like over, like, it's not that high. It's
Right.
I can't remember the levels right now, but because there's the bad one and then like the flock and then the blessed. So like it would just be above, right? So if you're doing too much shady stuff, you'll dip. But then I would make it possible for you to requisition for a higher piety score as if that was the item you were requisitioning.
Right.
So that kind of gives you something to do. Although usually it's the high charisma characters that don't need to worry about their piety score going down as much. And the other thing to remember is that in the flesh, your piety score isn't that important because people can't see it all the time unless they're wearing pure sight glasses or they have like a scanner. So
Right.
church police can scan you and figure out what it is. Or if they're wearing pure sight goggles that can see into the God net, they can see your piety score. But normally people can't tell just by looking at you. They have to actually be in the God net. If you're in the God net, your piety score is being broadcast right above you, which is why the flock is so much more comfortable in the God net because they know they can trust everyone, even though spoofed piety scores exist. But obviously, saying that would be doubting Malraux, so you can't say that.
Right,
So,
right.
there's a whole sticky logic thing here. But so, yeah, if you're traveling through the God net, then your piety score is much more important. But in the flesh, you can kind of get away with. Your piety score not being so hot unless they check, which is, they usually only check if you're trying to get through a checkpoint or you've been doing things that probably already lowered your piety score in the first place.
Right. No, I remember Rod, so it might have came from him, or he at least used it, doing that when you go into the piety score. It's kind of like, here's your piety score, but it's going to fluctuate depending on what you do, because this is the spoof. But if you're in the God net, as you said, the score is above your head, everybody can see it. If you start doing things either for or against, things that would either raise or lower, and the little number on above your head wasn't adjusting for that, then that would draw suspicion
Yeah,
right
that's the other
there.
way of looking at it, I guess, because I was always looking at them as being stolen. Piety scores from someone else. So you get it, it's just someone else's piety score
Ah,
and
so
your actions adjust it.
you're messing with that other guy.
Yeah, but then if you're saying the version you're saying is like it's been hacked, it's just projecting this number no matter what you do and nothing changes, then yeah, that would also be sus in a different way.
Right. So there was various things to do. My thing was kind of like the piety score is part of your biometrics, part of your data within the cyber papacy, like your ID, whether it's a driver's license number or passport number, depending on the country and what type of IDs you have. But all of that information is, stored in the GodNet. And so they kind of invent an identity that have your basic biometrics. If you want to ch have a name change for a secret identity or a cyber papal identity, you could do that. It would have like your iris, your fingerprints, palm print. It'd have all of that type of stuff. Your gait, your facial dimensions, and your piety score would be part of that. But it would be a much like a fake ID where they'll take a photo of you and put it on a fake
Right.
ID. It's kind of like put that
Yeah.
piety score on the fake thing, It's then uploaded, secretly or through hackers and stuff into the Godnet, so it's there. It's real, meaning it can be accessed through, the church police devices that, they scan you, your biometrics hit it, boom, there's the piety score. Kind of like license plates. Like I said, all of these things to identify this person, but that identity is false. So the spoof is part of that false identity that will be adjusted accordingly as you do things, because if not, then it's, suspect as a, oh, this person, yeah, because those pirate, even for a normal person in the cyber papacy, they're going to be doing all their prayers every day. They're going to have little slight adjustments, and all those are probably recorded in some data stream. So if you get inserted into it and nothing changes, then that's another thing that, there's a suspect of, hey, there's no history after, it's like when you're in a forum and somebody comes and posts, and you, that's the one post that they did and nothing before and nothing after, you're like, is this a sock puppet account, or what's, this is a little, like you said, a little sus going on. So
And that's the thing, if you're just dealing with the church police, they maybe do a scan on you. And they look at it like, okay, that's it. But an inspector or an inquisitor might take a deeper dive and request access to the records to the Godnet, which will take a while to get to them. And then when they get it, they'll be like, oh, wait, this was just created last week, you know? And they'll be able to figure it out. But that's sort of the theme with the cyber papacy, is that it takes time for them to catch up to you.
Yeah, that's where the Theo bureaucracy comes in, the social 18. It's a little difficult to go through the channels, but once you're detected, once you're, hey, then forces are going to go after you. And it might start off with, okay, we have some street beater, cyber people, police out there, and they're going to, they're sent to eliminate the problem, or bring the problem in for questioning, and the Storm Knights are just gonna mop the floor with them unless they volu if they if there's not a voluntary giving up or a voluntary let's run away and try to hide, if there's any confrontation, the Storm Knights are gonna win, and unless dice are horrible, horrible, horrible. But then that would give the higher ups incentives to next time, we're going to bring in heavy hitters, whether it's an angel, a host, or something else out there. They will send in appropriate
I
forces.
always thought of it. There was a quote, and I can't remember the quote now exactly, but it was from Warhammer 40K about the Imperium, about how the wheels of justice in the Imperium or the military is very slow and it's ponderous to get the speed. But when it does, it is a horrendous juggernaut that it'll just steamroll over anything. So you have to imagine if you do get enough blips on you to get really noticed in the cyber papacy, it is probably the worst reality to be in when that happens. They will be able to dispatch stuff all over you, and if you get to the Babel monitor level, it's going to be a problem, as we've
So,
seen in the Matrix.
yes. So I would just suggest for all players and game masters to take these things into account. Going into the cyber papacy isn't just a nice little vacation. There are trackable, your actions are trackable, and there are both good and bad consequences for your actions. So keep that in mind when you go into that type of setting, and the piety score kind of reflects that. So and there's a whole list in both the I believe in the core rules, as well as definitely in the Cyber Papacy source book, on what different actions will raise or lower your piety score by how much, plus depending on who you're doing things to or for can adjust those even further. You know, maybe taking out a, you know, you're going to get negative points no matter what if you take out a street beater, but that's going to be
Right.
different than if you take out a jack priest or an inquisitor or the whole interior of a reliquary,
Yeah.
you know, or something like that. So it's just like,
Or as long, if they know it was you.
right, if they know it was you. And in a place where the toaster spies on you, then there's lots of data going back. So
And that's one of the things that makes it a little bit of a balancing act for the game master, especially if you're running a big adventure like this of many acts with many scenes in those acts that are all connected, is how much do you allow player consequences to derail the adventure? Like, do you don't want to run it like as the full-blown railroad. Players hate that. And there's been some talk of other adventures like the God Box, perhaps having a little bit of that going on. But these do all follow plots, so you can't get too distracted or it becomes a totally different adventure almost. And in this one, unlike some of the others, I think everything is a little bit more linked. It all kind of naturally builds, although somewhat slowly. So sometimes your players might not really catch what's going on yet, but it's all working in the background. So that's the thing. It's like as a and it depends if you're on a time crunch too. If you're playing with your home group and you have all the time in the world, then you can afford like to play two or three sessions where the players are just evading the street beaters and the cyber church in general and hiding out with the resistance and trying to find out where they can come out again and even reach the Delphi Council. All that is great stuff. But if you're on a time crunch and you've agreed to run this module for people over like 2 months or something, then you also have to be like, okay, well, maybe the Cygoyles record you. The data gets sent to Babel and it is shunted somewhere. And in a week, someone will find it and react. So you've got some time. So you can use that low tech level, low social level to kind of buy you room that way. And in some ways, it can feel like a cheat because it's just that the speed of plot or whatever the GM wants. But generally speaking, you're kind of safe with just letting them get away with stuff unless someone plays a setback or something, or things are just getting really egregious.
And I was thinking even this is when the Cyber Papal version, I just consider all of them Dino Attack, you know,
Right.
as okay, the next time somebody plays that church police, you know, squad coming. Well, no, it's not going to be a church police squad. It's going to be a host, or it's going to be a, you know, the more, the bigger threat. They can get the possibilities like the card says, but the threat's going to be bigger because this is something that happened way back then, and
Right.
now you're choosing when to trigger it. But with all adventures, that what you stated was exactly the key point, is depending on your group and the purpose of the game, how you're going to be able to play it, and how loose and sandboxy you'll allow it, how far you'll allow it to go off the rails, or if it's just at mid-act or at the end of the act, it's just like, okay, there is, you can't get back on. You know,
Right.
you've left the train and destroyed the track. This adventure in the background or whatever is going to have to unfold, or hey, I'm going to have to take a couple of weeks to think about, you know, what happens, and we're going to start another, you know, adventure just because it's gone that big. And that's what, as a game master, you only have to figure out how to juggle those things.
Yeah, and there's some pretty far-reaching consequences if things
Yes.
get derailed in this
Right,
adventure.
yeah. This adventure has some pretty significant consequences if the Storm Knights aren't able to complete it, which then could change your Cosmverse, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. as I've stated before, in my personal Cosmverse under Classic Torg, the Aztec Empire came to being because the Storm Knights didn't completely shut off the darkness device from coming back. Like, they beat the High Lord, they made the darkness device flee, and then they left all the Stele up, and they just walked away and were like, good job, us. And then after a few months, the darkness device came back, got a new High Lord, and went slower, you know, because it was like, and they allowed Azteca to come. So you can, and that's part of the thing. The Storm Knights, you know, started feeling guilty and took things more seriously, and, you know, it had a lot of character development and stuff. So just because things go off track a little bit doesn't mean that your Cosmverse is ruined. You just went a different way than normal. But that was kind of the main thing I wanted to talk about was the piety score. At some point, I'll want to talk about DSRs in the GodNet versus what's happening outside of it. Multiple people traveling into the GodNet, which is easier in Torg Eternity than it was in Classic Torg with temp trods and stuff like that. But we can go ahead and kind of get started on Act One, Paris Burning. And you might correct me if my memory is wrong, Jay, but since they're talking,
Been a while for me too.
I guess it will get into scene two, so I'll wait until that to the end. But
Oh,
see,
regarding Paris?
yeah, regarding Paris as a hard point.
Yeah. I believe this was before the
For
Gen
the,
Con
yeah,
adventure.
before the on
I
needles
mean, I
needle
was running
point.
this during playtesting time,
Yeah.
so it was before that anyways. At that point, I don't
Right,
know.
right.
I didn't even know about that.
so scene one, tourist trap, scene location, Brussels, Belgium, core Earth dominant. The Storm Knights are introduced to their handler, Michael Grubber, and basically he gives them a briefing, said he speaks English with a thick German accent. Again, my rule of thumb is whatever language you speak at your table, that should be the common language. And everybody else who is speaking to you is speaking in a bad version of their country's, you know, accent. So if Germans are playing this, people are speaking German, and a guy could be speaking in a German in a bad whatever you would consider a bad American accent, and, you know, then you can go with it as a game master or players and have fun with that. But they're introduced to Grubber, and he introduce or welcomes them to Belgium, and basically starts talking about the hard point of Paris that's centered on the Eiffel Tower, and that they have a tunnel running from like outside to under and then into Paris, and that's where they kind of want to transport the Storm Knights via, and he gives them a contact, and then he gives them also a mission that there are resistant members in Paris who have uncovered information that there is a special type of cyberpapacy rank known as special envoys, which seem to have a pretty decent, almost like freedom, you know, unprecedented freedom within the cyber papacy. So what he's trying to do, or what they want to do, is they want to take a device, take it to I want to say a reliquary, but I could be wrong. Some type of hub in church or cathedral and add this device to it that would then give the Storm Knights this special envoy status that they could kind of give them a little free rein. He introduces them to a Delphi Council NPC that is, in my group, the most hated person ever.
Dr. Blackburn?
Doctor, yeah, Doctor
I was going to
Blackburn.
say the same thing.
So, and why we're saying this, if you haven't got into Dr. Blackburn, he's also, I believe, he's in Heroes of the Possibility War, maybe in a few other places, but he's kind of like the
Think he was like
smart.
a backer character, right? Like from the original Kickstarter.
It might have been. I don't know. All I know is he like is completely full of himself and in no way, shape, or form, humble to. He basically looks at everybody as a mental inferior, and he lets them know it. And like one of the very first things he says is like, he looks at the Storm Knights and he's like, "Which of you is the second most intelligent in the room?" Which then immediately, all my players are like, "Are you sure he's on our side? Because we really want to get rid of him right now. That would be nice." But he basically explains the device, which he calls the Judas Rood, which is kind of a cross with circuitry and a program inside of it that, when inserted into the right spot, will do the thing that we were talking about, do the spoofing, make the identities, make the characters or the Storm Knights have a new ID with the special envoy status. And one of the things that he talks about is for the Storm Knights, and this means the players, and it can be fun. I remember my players having fun with this, giving a full name. The hierarchy would be special envoy, but then a date of birth, a citizenship, a vow on records, awards receive, and special handling notes. And there is even a point where it says if anybody has upset him, he will try to input under vows on record a vow of silence. So kind of like as a, oh, when you're on this mission, if you don't want to be seen as breaking your vow, being looked at suspiciously. So I'm gonna make it so that you can't talk. But it does allow the players can have fun with the date of birth, citizenship, awards received, special handling notes and stuff, which sadly, I ran this game and I played this game, and I do not remember any of the things that any of my players came up with, except I remember both rolling my eyes and laughing under one of the special handling instructions, what one of my players came up with. Something before I hand it over to you, Jay, also is that there is a note here that says, starting with the first character photographed and then proceeding around the table, ask each Storm Knight to answer these questions and record their answers. They could come up later in the adventure when anyone tries to query the Godnet about them, or query Godnet about them. In the adventure itself, I don't recall any prompts to a game master necessarily saying, hey, this is a time when you can bring up a special handling note, or hey, this is a time that you might look at what your player said about vows. But there are times as a game master where you could use those. So this will be something that I heavily encourage game masters to read ahead of time. And even though that's something that any good game master advice person will tell you, read your adventure, read your notes ahead of time, I am very sorry in lacking these things, and many times I wrote I run things cold turkey, and after I got through maybe over half of the book and realized that these things weren't coming up, then I started sprinkling them in as a game master. So yes, this is one of those do as I say and don't do as I do, and read ahead of time, because these chapters and stuff can bring some pretty important things in. And towards that time, the end, I did start reading ahead, because I'm like, oh, this one is a little more difficult to run cold turkey like I'm accustomed to many, many times. So, Jay, did you have anything to say about the little things that Blackburn requests from either him himself or that he requests from the Storm Knights?
I actually don't remember if it was my like if what my players thought of Blackburn, but all I know is like I didn't like him. Like, I was like, oh, this guy. Although I found it funny that for the Judas Rood, he actually put just a bunch of extra neon lights that don't actually do anything on it, just so it would look like something from a cyber papacy.
Right.
As far as the filling in the info, I did find some of my players, they didn't have the information on their sheet. Like I said, this is from years ago. So one that I found interesting is there was a dwarf dragon warrior, Greymane Greybeard, and he had Eilish citizenship, awards received, meritorious conduct of the Battle of Three Rivers. But the interesting thing was special handling notes. It was that he must remain in his armor at all times. You may not request him to take it off. So that was for the any inquisitors or church police that would get his status, basically would have it, they can't get him out of the armor.
Right.
Like, slight spoilers. I mean, I've talked about it in the past. This character perished at some point in the adventure, far later, and got replaced with a Nodder. And for some reason, that same player put in his awards received that he got geek cred by breaking into a reliquary vault on January 9th, which would basically guarantee his arrest and imprisonment if
Right.
anyone ever checked his status, I guess, aside from being a special envoy. So I don't know, it's very suspicious. I don't know why he would put that.
Especially
That
like
does,
his first character was so protective, and then the second one
yeah.
was the opposite.
Which also kind of brings, we haven't really talked too much about the whole special envoy situation and what we're doing, which we'll get to momentarily. But there is an issue of, as a GM, what to do if you do lose a player partway through this campaign and a new character comes in.
Right.
Should they also have special envoy status? Should they not? And what kind of friction will that cause? I basically made it the assumption that the Judas Rood also put in like a few other like side like standby accounts or something so that they could come in, because again we were also playtesting, so
Right.
it was like, we got I can't spend too long thinking about this, we just got to go through it.
So yeah, that's actually a good point. So we talked about this special envoy. It's very much a almost do what you want. If an inquisitor or an investigator or a higher up person in the cyber papacy is confronted with you and looks this up and sees the special envoy, that's almost like a thing saying this person is doing things for the cyber papacy, even if on the outside they don't look it. So it's kind of like this might be an undercover person. This might be a person trying to infiltrate a place. So they're gonna not just assume, okay, he cast a spell, therefore he's should be killed. It will
Right.
be he is putting his soul on the line so that he can benefit, figure out, infiltrate a witch's coven and bring them down from the inside. He's giving up his soul to be able to do that. That's a good thing. So it kind of gives people with this special envoy a lot more freedom than what they would otherwise.
One
Now,
of the things I actually really liked is in the book they mention players might ask, but I'm an Edinos, or I'm a dwarf.
right.
How could I possibly be a special envoy for the Cyber Papacy? And that is part of the point, is that they want this, that if you're a dwarf and you're a special envoy, this is the ultimate test to see if
Right.
it works.
Right. So yeah, the Delphi Council has just kind of figured out, hey, this special envoy thing is a thing. And then the Storm Knight's kind of mission is to see how far can we push this thing. You know, is it really the thing we think it is, or is it not the thing that we think it is? So kind of one of the first parts of this mega adventure is like a little mission to determine that. I did the opposite. For w one of my Storm Knights ended up martyring themselves with a martyr card and came in, and they came in just with a spoofed piety score because they weren't part of, you know, that putting the Judas Rood into the machine, and that caused issues when you know, the group was confronted and they're like, okay, all of you are special envoys except for that one. And then, you know, depending on which part of the cyber church was looking into it, what are we going to do? If it was just a street beater, then the group could easily say he's with us. But when they went into certain abbeys and stuff, they're like, okay, you will escort you around, but he stays out. And then the group had to determine, is he going to stay out by himself, or do we split the party so that people can be, you know, a couple of people can be with him in case something happens to him, you know, as a thing. So that is how I introduced it, was to he was an outsider. Most of the time the players could have their Storm Knights convince the authorities that, yeah, he's with us, we're using him too. But there were some places that he was not accepted in because he did not, you know, it's you don't have that envoy status, so no. We don't care what the special envoy, you guys can do the stuff, but you still, with that status, can't order me to go against other things. I can't stop you, but I can stop anybody else, kind of that thing is where I took it. But as a game master, if that occurs, you will have to determine which of those extremes or where in the middle you want to have. Do you want to have a couple of backup IDs ready and waiting, and then just slip them in and have the person, when they make a new character, have these, you know, date of birth, citizenship, vows, awards, special handling, etc., on there? Or do they come in and you're just like, sorry, but you weren't part of that, so it's going to be a little more difficult for you.
I did have two characters actually change. And ironically, both of them changed. I think so. One of them changed first. I had a very cheesy transformed Eilish elf who had transformed to the Cyber Papacy to become a white witch,
Okay.
and practiced New Age paganism. That character at some point got like retired, or like they just changed character to a Tharkold psychic. And that person did not get special envoy status, or at least didn't write it all down, which, as the most meticulous player, they would have. Whereas the replacement for the dwarf was the Nodder with a ridiculous computer score. So I think it might have also been that he was just like, since he was such a elite hacksaw, maybe he did it himself. I don't remember
Right.
exactly. So I guess I did do a little bit of both. So that's
So,
also an option too.
right, you get de depending on what different people choose as a new character. So again, Dr. Blackburn gives the Storm Knights this Judas Rune to implant into the machine, and then they go on the underground rail to get into Paris. And then that leads to scene two, the real world, which is Paris, France, which is a at this point a core Earth dominant zone, as we
That
alluded.
I was just gonna that
Maybe we're
underground rail always
under.
kind of bothered me because
Like
it's supposed to be the underground, right? Like the
a metro type thing,
well,
or
okay,
well,
is
both.
it
I assumed it was a
because
play
it's
on words,
capitalized.
that it was both, like, we made an actual railroad, but it is serving as a shipping people back and forth, like a underground railroad in figurative. So figurative and literal is how I was
But
looking at it.
it's, yeah, because they mentioned in the very beginning, it mentions there's a stable underground route from here to Paris, and it was explored by a seeker named Una, and most routes to the underground shift over time. So that's like the Eilish underground,
Right.
right? But they somehow managed to build a stable railway track 330
Kilometers.
kilometers to Paris. It just seems a bit crazy. And I was very confused the first time I read this, and I thought it, I didn't think it was like the actual underground. I figured it was just like a tunnel.
Or the land
And I,
between.
yeah, and I didn't actually look at a map to see how far it was until after. And then I'm like, this is a really long tunnel to be going through the underground. So I kind of think also, you know, if you're not pressed for time, having something happen on the way there might be neat too, you know, to remind people it's the underground instead of them just getting in a train, closing, you know, having a bit of a nap as you go into a totally different reality.
Right. And I think in the Dances on Needle's Point, whichever one it deals with the Paris hard point. That one is another one that you go on the railroad, and it actually has kind of some stuff happening at that time. Or maybe it was just who ran me through it did it to kind of spruce it up a little bit. So Game Masters, yeah, this journey through the underground, and if a seeker has done it, it could possibly be part of the land between type thing going on, and that's how it goes. You can come up with your ways on why is it a permanent thing. Basically, if two things are linked, maybe they become more permanent, or whatever Torg metaphysics you want to go to be able to explain that away. That's okay. But yeah, you can have little encounters or whatever going on it. They get to Paris, and basically a man with a fabulous mustache and a beret greets them and leads them to scene two, the real world.
It's amazing how much the word fabulous mustache can really get the players talking.
So the mustache guy is named Guy.
McGee.
Okay. People who've been watching this for long enough know there are certain languages I'm decent with and other ones that I absolutely suck with, and French is one of those that I cannot do except bad accent. So pronunciation correctly is not anywhere in my head for
I also assumed
French.
our main contact was Michael Gruber, but you know, as in Hans Gruber.
Right. But he basically then does another thing that, depending on your players, could take very fun as well, as he's like, okay, first you get the fake identities, Now you get to play dress up or cosplay.
Right.
And is like a theater's, costume department. Go crazy, and then the players can tell you what their characters are looking for and how they dress up.
My players didn't really dress up much because they had a disguise spell.
Ah, okay. I do remember, again, I don't remember the specifics. I do remember my players having a lot of fun with this. They even offer mime makeup. And my brother wasn't in it, so somebody might have actually done that. My brother does not like mimes or clowns in any way, shape, or form.
Mine
So
either.
that is one. And he listens to these podcasts, I found out. So, Jason, at least you weren't in this and you didn't get offered to be a mime, right? In this, they kind of does a, you have these things. Again, we're pushing the how the special envoy thing goes, so we really want to, make, if you want to be crazy looking, you can be crazy looking. If you just want to be normal or hidden, you can do that. Just figure out what you want to do. And then I believe that it leads to him then introducing Odette, who then introduces Viola Villars, the iconic cyber witch from
Oh
the.
wait. Before that though,
Yes.
I think it's one of a very important part
Okay.
of this scene, in my opinion, is when he lets you out to head in to go find Odette. There's a address by Malraux
Oh,
to
yes, I forgot.
the area,
I read that before this too and forgot to mention that.
and this is like sometimes this. I mean. If you've played in the Cyber Papacy a bunch already, your players have probably already seen it. But if this is like their first real introduction, you should really ham up this sermon or announcement or whatever he's
Right.
giving as much as humanly possible,
Yes.
right? Because this is one of the High Lords. They're not meeting him, but they are seeing him. I actually made like a picture for the hologram that I could like pop up onto the screen while it was going and everything, and just read it out. And because there was at least one witch in the group at the time, all of his talk about killing witches really hit home there. So yeah, it's good to always get a chance to actually role play the High Lords. It doesn't come up that often, so you should relish the chance.
Before we started this, I had actually read that and was like, "Oh, that's a good point to bring up." And then, of course, I get talking and rambling and instantly forget about it. But yes, basically, they're in Paris, which is a hard point. So the cyber papacy is not in there, but on the edges of the edges of that hard point area is the cyber papacy. So they are projecting cyber papal propaganda into the hard point to try to get the people in the hard point to accept the cyber pope and the cyber papacy. And so the cyber pope has they even point out nightly, here is Malraux to give us our nightly admonition. So basically, it's a nightly thing where the Cyber Pope appears in holographic form and spouts his thing. Like Jay said, you can really ham this up and make it as high lord like as you want, because this is a way to get the players to, if nothing else, understand a little bit more about this high lord and how he speaks and ways that he does. I mean, a lot of people, as we pointed out in our episodes that talked about the cyber papacy, a lot of people accept it, because a lot of quote unquote, a lot of good things occur at the cost of you needing to believe in a way and follow orders and that type of thing. But there's a lot of healing that goes on, you know, less sicknesses and stuff like that. So this is a way that he is using that propaganda. It's almost like I'm thinking about North Korea and South Korea. You know, they'll try to across the demilitarized zone, you know, have the loudspeakers playing the music and words and dropping pamphlets and that type of stuff. So this I could see being a similar situation. So that happens, and then Gi tells the Storm Knights, you know, okay, you got your outfits, cool, and introduces you to Odette and Viola Villars, who is the iconic Cyber Witch from the core book. So she's one of the main kind of iconics going on. And then that leads into scene three, Making Mischief, which is in Paris, France, cyber papacy. So it's outside of the hard point. And what this is to have the Storm Knights do bad things in the eyes of the cyber papacy, again, as it's kind of a build up to, if you know, we're introducing you here, we're going to have you do some bad things, then, you know, hopefully you're going to be able to get this Judas Rood done, and then we're going to test this special envoy status. So the first thing is to, before you get the special envoy status, is to get some criminal background on your rap, you know, to get a
Yeah.
rap sheet, basically.
You basically needed to have a file in the cyber papacy records first. So, because people are using spoofed accounts, they might not really have a real file to latch the special envoy onto. So they need an actual file, which they do by making crimes, apparently. Most of my group already did the crimes on the way there, and all but the dwarf, I think, had records of the cyber papacy already, so they did have to go out and do something with him. I think they broke a window or something like that, and then like set a bunch of derogatory stuff on the street corner and argued with someone and then ran off. It was, so they didn't have to do too much.
Yeah, the only thing I again remember, because I both played and game mastered this, but it has been some years ago. But I remember the Cyber Witch being the most, probably both defacing church property and arguing with the cyber priest. They probably took, there's some suggestions that the book gives, and they probably took it as a checklist instead of like a choose one, where most of the other people, you know, kind of just chose one or two. The cyber witch was like, I'm gonna do them all. So, and the thing is to do the crime and escape, because
And escape.
that needs to be done. It leads to a possibility of a foot chase, I believe,
Like street
and
beaters are chasing
with,
you.
yeah, street beaters and possibly a herald or multiple, depending on how big your group is. And they list some possible complications, possible setbacks, and thinking like that. It does give suggestions for a couple of cards, like the La Resistance card, Cosm card. I do believe that that might have been played by my group as a way to kind of get away scot-free, and that. But do you have anything else about this little, let's make some mischief, do some naughty things, and then flee the police?
No, like I said, I was pretty quick for my group because most of them already had records.
Records. So it's like, we don't need to. We already have them done. So then, scene four. Oh, yeah, this is what French.
Park de
Park
Servers.
de server, park de server, park the servers. This one again is in the cyber people part of the zone, but they basically it has it like starts there, but there is some meantime. Meantime, they regroup in the real world. Odette congratulates them. Basically is like, okay, now you take your rune, now you go to this place, now you do this DSR, and you know, hopefully when it activate it, everything is fine, and your special envoy status will go into the godnet, and then you know, you all we will all see how this special envoy thing works. So it does say the planet is relatively simple. They'll all depart through catacombs. They'll get to the former Musée d'Archéologie, Archéologie Nationale or something. It's now the Sainte-Geneviève Parc des Serveurs. Heavy security, but the tunnel opens up inside the main gate. Viola is supposed to take care of sensors if everybody can avoid church police and the technicians. So she's kind of like, I'll get rid of the mechanical sensors being able to see you, but you gotta get past all the real people. And then it says they must distract church forces long enough for the installation to complete, and then use an alternative escape plan rather than risking the catacombs. So it's almost like she has agents in scuba gear in the nearby river, so it's kind of like if you need to jump ship, jump into the river, and my scuba team will get you to safety. But then the operation is considered a dramatic skill resolution. Everything from entering the building to installing the Judas Rune, hacking the files, to connect the Storm Knight data to the Judas Rune. And then step D is to get out. So it's not just a one place, one location, normal 10-second round thing going on here. And this one, the rounds are going to be as long as it's needed for a step to be, you know, attempted, because the steps are very different in different locales doing very different things. So it's not just breaking into a computer and getting data, it's getting into the place, breaking into the computer, transferring data, and getting out. Anything to say about the DSR before we move on?
My players were very much looking forward to having to be scuba'd out, but they passed the DSR very easily, and it was not an issue. So they ran it out like the wind. Which is there's two important things about the DSR. One is that if you do it within 5 rounds, then the special envoy status is permanent; it doesn't get noticed. But if it takes longer, then it only lasts for the adventure, and after the adventure's done, you lose it. But they did it quick enough, they got it. Secondly, in step C, if you get a good success, you get special lore from Malraux's notes that he sends out. And I honestly cannot remember if my players found this or not. And I think they didn't, because I remember they were very confused about stuff at some points, and I think if they had found this, they wouldn't have been. Which does kind of lead you to, should something like this be hidden behind a difficulty or a level of success? I don't know. That's sort of up to you. If you like having like these be breadcrumbs, and you know, for players that want to give a bit more, the best thing I guess you could probably do is say like, okay, you got a standard success, but there is something for good, you know.
One of the things Mark did a lot, and we've mentioned it about DSRs, is if somebody, 'cause the groups, at least that when we were doing Wednesday streaming, we almost always tried to get outstanding on everything that we could. And if somebody hadn't got outstanding on a DSR in general, and it wasn't needed, it was just one of those DSRs that was a yes or no. It wasn't a you get extra stuff per levels of success. Mark would always say, just keep the possibility. Don't worry about the card. Don't play the card. You don't need to play the possibility. And then there would be people arguing, like, no, I really want an outstanding. And he's like, you don't need an outstanding, you know, that type of thing. So on this one would be one that he wouldn't say that. You know, he would just allow the person to get the good or outstanding. Or if they got a good and outstanding doesn't do anything, then he would say, okay, good is enough. So yes, as a game master, you're gonna have to decide for your party, is this something that you wish to be, do you feel that this is needed? If you don't feel it's needed, do you feel that you should hint that if they spend a little more, they might get a little more? In my game, again, I play with 7 to 8 Storm Knights. I don't have to tell them to save possibilities because they're gonna have more possibilities just because there's more players. So I would not do that, and it's up to them, you know, to determine that. But that's because I have more players. If I would have fewer players with fewer possibilities, and those possibilities, you know, really needed to be saved up, then I probably would say something like, you know, you might if you. You might get something on a good, or you know, there's levels of success that do have meaning. I wouldn't necessarily say, hey, if you get a good success, and then read what they get if they get a good success, because you know
No.
that. But it might be a here it's under a heading called bonus data. So I might say, hey, if you get above a standard, there might be bonus data if I had a small group, but my big group, I'm just gonna. And to, you know, not sound like I'm being absolutely mean, everybody from that group played Classic Torg where there was no real transparency, so they're accustomed to not knowing until they've spent possibilities, you know, what type of success levels they get. So that was one thing that they had to actually adjust to. Was being more transparent where I was giving difficulty numbers and stuff like that, or like, what are you doing, Lehman? You know, this isn't how we play Torg. And it's like, no, Torg Eternity is a little more transparent and
It's
stuff.
always funny when you switch to another game, like back and forth, and I go to the D&D game and I'm like, all right, so everyone needs to make a saving throw DC. Oh, I don't have to tell you what the DC is.
Right. So yes, there's the on step C, they can get some bonus data that explains a little bit from the Cyber Pope, and then they escape, and that leads to scene 5. But we will go ahead and stop there because we're already at the hour. So next time we will pick up at scene 5, and we will probably do similar to how we did previously, where we'll do a couple of these mega adventures, and then we'll have a break every now and then for something more general. I think that's a good rule of thumb, so it's not like we have the next 14 to 20 episodes that are just unhallowed data and nothing else. And we'll try to also add some stuff that can apply to anybody like we did at the first part of this adventure. So, having said that, thank you very much for either listening or viewing us, depending on where you are getting this podcast. And until next time, we hope you have fun in your own cosmos. Bye.